There's a lot of information out there about gluten in our diets. Some good, some bad, and some ugly, as in this exchange in the movie, This Is the End.
Gluten's a vague term. It's something that's used to categorize things that are bad. You know? Calories. That's a gluten. Fat. That's a gluten.
Somebody just told you you probably shouldn't eat gluten. You're like, oh, I guess I shouldn't eat gluten.
A lot of people have a better handle on the concept of gluten than Seth Rogen, but our next guest says media hype and misinformation often lead people to make bad health decisions and often to go on gluten-free diets when they don't actually need to.
Rory Jones is with us now. She's a science writer and adjunct professor of narrative medicine at Columbia University's Barnard College. She's the co-author with Dr. Peter Green of the book Celiac Disease, A Hidden Epidemic, and the book we're talking about now, Gluten Exposed. Rory, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Let's start by straightening things out for those movie stars there. What is gluten, really?
Well, gluten is the protein portion of wheat, rye, and barley. Gluten is the multi-system ravager in today's media frenzy, which you pointed out. Wheat, rye, and barley also have carbohydrate contents to them, but gluten is the actual protein part of it.
It seems like part of what makes gluten and eating gluten such a tricky issue is that there are some people who really do have celiac disease or other conditions, but most people don't, and a gluten-free diet isn't going to help them necessarily. So is that part of what's making things confusing for people looking at this?
I think so. That's part of it. And they're reading a lot of pseudoscience, pointing fingers at different things. 1% of the population, approximately, has celiac disease. But interestingly, only about 17% of that population has been actually diagnosed. So you actually have a lot of people out there who may get sick when they eat gluten, but haven't been diagnosed with celiac diseases yet. Some of these people go on a gluten-free diet, say that they're feeling better, and they categorize themselves as being gluten-sensitive, gluten-intolerant. But as long as you are tested, this is the group, the people with celiac disease, who really cannot eat it.
A lot of people might say, hey, even if I don't have celiac, there's no harm in going gluten-free, so why not? So is gluten-free harmless for most people?
Actually, it's not a healthy diet, even for people with celiac disease who are on it, who have to be very, very careful. The problem with the diet is that people think it's one healthy. And the gluten-free diet is wheat itself. I'll go back to wheat. Wheat itself is a very healthy grain. It is loaded with fiber, vitamins, and minerals. When you take it out of someone's diet, because it's in many, many things that we eat, it's in cereal, it's in bread, and all of the wheat flours and a lot of the wheat products are fortified with vitamins and minerals. The gluten-free products are not. So a gluten-free diet, when you take this out, is low in fiber, it's low in vitamins, and it's low in many minerals. And when you add back gluten-free foods that are made with extra sugar and fat, you're putting these things back in a diet that doesn't need it. It also has increased levels of heavy metals because it's heavily rice and corn-based. The rice itself naturally absorbs arsenic from groundwater. So people who eat a lot of gluten-free products, which have a lot of rice in them, are getting a very high level. They've done studies on this. They show very high levels of mercury and arsenic and other things. So the bottom line of the healthy part of a gluten-free diet is that if you do not put back the vitamins, minerals, and fiber that you're taking out, it's not healthy for you at all.
And that's one of your recommendations of the book. Someone going gluten-free for any reason, good or bad, is best off talking to a nutritionist to make sure they make up for what they're missing.
Yes, yes. And a lot of people just go to the internet or they go to a friend and someone says to them, well, this is what I'm doing. And a lot of others, people who come to the Celiac Center in New York, many, many of them, as Peter Green talks about a great deal, are B vitamin deficient. Quite heavily so. They have B12, B6 deficiencies. And if you're not being followed by a doctor and or a nutritionist, this can go in a very bad direction.
Talking to Rory Jones. She's co-author of the book Gluten Exposed, trying to untangle fact from fiction when it comes to gluten in our diets. So, Rory, a lot of people have probably thought, oh, I've got this stomach ailment or that other one. I think I might have celiac. I might be gluten intolerant, something like that. So if somebody's thinking that, what's the best way for them to try to figure out, okay, is this really the deal? Do they really need to avoid gluten?
They should get tested. It is a very straightforward, simple blood test that is available from their doctor. And the test, there's one very good test that is about 90%. It's called the TTG. It's a tissue transglutaminase, IgA. And if they have this test and it proves to be very positive, they follow up with an intestinal biopsy, and they will then know whether or not they have celiac disease. And if they don't, the doctor can also figure out what else is going on.
Now, here's where the problem starts for a lot of people. People go in thinking they have celiac, and you write about this in the book. They get the test. They say, nope, no celiac. That's not your problem. It's another cause. But they still think they do. So what do you say to those people who don't agree with the test, who keep believing they have celiac or something like it and behaving accordingly?
Well, there are two sides to that. One is when people have a very firmly held belief that this is what is wrong with them, the more you try to convince them that that's not the case, the more firmly they will hold the belief. They've done actual studies on that. The other is that if they're at a physician, the physician can try to find out what else might be at play. A lot of these people may have irritable bowel syndrome. And a lot of people, when they take gluten out of their diet, they are reacting to the carbohydrate side of it. And they may have what is known as, which we write about, is a FODMAP sensitivity. FODMAP is an acronym for the many carbohydrates, the complex ones, the fructose, the sucrose, that are found in many foods, garlic, onions, wheat has fructans. And by taking gluten out of their diet, they're actually lowering their FODMAP content, and that's making them feel better.
So, in effect, they're accidentally curing themselves a little bit, is what you're saying.
It may be. It may be. And the other thing that one can do is have a gene test, because there are two specific genes, DQ2, DQ8, which everyone with celiac disease has. And if you don't have those two genes, you will not have celiac disease. And that can definitely be ruled out.
Now, this all leads to another concern that you and your co-author raise in this book, that people who, in effect, self-diagnose with gluten intolerance or celiac disease might be making it impossible to diagnose what's actually causing whatever problems they're having. It can get in the way, right?
Yes, absolutely. I think that we've come in because of the internet and a lot of media, that people really feel that they can solve their problems by changing their eating behaviors. And there's a new condition which you may be familiar with called orthorexia nervosa, and it's a version of anorexia where people, because they feel it's healthy, start to remove one thing after another from their diet. They start with gluten, and then they decide that they're somewhat lactose intolerant. They take out all of the calcium-rich dairy in their diet, and then they're told that meat isn't good for them, so they take the meat out. One by one, they are taking out all the healthy parts of the diet, and they come to the doctor malnourished. And orthorexia has taken hold where people really think that they can eliminate food and make themselves better.
And you write in the book that actually the way we work, we've evolved as omnivores. Generally, lots of variety tends to be a good thing, as long as, you know, we don't have really particular sensitivities to a particular food.
Absolutely. Eating healthy, variety is the key. And there's, as we're fond of saying, there are these things called fruit, vegetables, fish, meat, and dairy that are food, that are the best things for you.
Maybe one of our problems is we tend to oversimplify when we think of what's going on in our guts. It's, I input A, this food or whatever, B is the output, that's all it is. It turns out, reading your book, our guts are really, really complicated. You refer to them as the second brain
right.
at some points. So
right.
How complicated is what's going on down there?
Well, it's pretty complicated. complicated. The second brain refers to the neurological component of what's going on. I mean, our gut operates independent of conscious thought, right? You don't have to think, well, I have to digest my food, the same way that your heart beats without your brain having to tell you that it's going to make your heart beat. So all of this going on in your gut is very well controlled by the nervous system in there. You also have what's called a microbiome. I mean, we've grown with what used to be called neural flora and fauna with trillions of bacteria that taste various things and tell our immune system this is safe and this is not safe. And when people start to tinker with the way the gut normally is used to working, they can get in a lot of trouble and they can really mess things up. And people also take a tremendous amount of supplements and vitamins because they think it's healthier. So instead of eating food, they're eating pills.
We're talking to Rory Jones. She's co-author of the new book, Gluten Exposed. She's trying to separate fact from fiction when it comes to gluten in our diets, celiac disease, and how our body deals with wheat and other sources of gluten.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about gluten or about celiac disease? Have you been diagnosed with celiac disease? If you've gone gluten-free under the advice of your doctor, how has that worked out? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation about gluten and gluten-free diets. Our guest is Rory Jones, co-author of the book Gluten Exposed, and she's trying to help separate fact from fiction when it comes to gluten.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Is gluten a concern in your life and your family? Have you given it up with or without a doctor's advice? Do you have celiac disease? Do you think gluten-free has turned into a fad for a lot of people? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Rory, we've been mostly talking about people who don't have celiac disease here. In the book, you also give a lot of advice for people who do have it, who do have to go gluten-free. And you talk about dealing with the absence of those foods physically, nutritionally, and kind of mentally, too. Can you give a bit of advice for people who really are having to give up gluten?
Sure. I think the first thing you have to remember is to eat food, to move away from processed food as much as you can, because if you have celiac disease, a lot of processed food has hidden gluten in it. So eating healthy is important, and that doesn't, you know, the natural doesn't mean healthy. It means adding gluten-free grains back into your diet for fiber and vitamins and minerals. Quinoa, oats, lentils, chickpeas, buckwheat. Buckwheat is not wheat. Eat food rather than vitamin pills, which is very important. Vitamins have their own side effects. You can have way, way too many of them or not enough. As far as you mentioned the mental side of it, any restrictive diet after a period of time, for those of us who have to be on it, is stressful. And stress loads the prefrontal cortex in our brain, which makes us anxious. And after a period of time, this can cause a lot of issues. So I think it's really important for you to get used to the diet, to learn to ask questions, be prepared. It's especially hard for teenagers, I think, who want to be with their friends and want to be like everybody else, and all of a sudden everyone's out having pizza and beer, and you can't. So there are lots of sides of it, and it's a process. I think it takes time, and if you put your mind to it that you will find other foods that you like eating, you'll be able to get through this much, much better.
Let's go to our callers now. We've got Diane on the line in Richmond, Illinois. Diane, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Diane?
I almost drove off the side of the road listening to the author. My daughter went to a gastroenterologist, and she got tested for celiacs, and she turned out she does not have celiacs. But she wasn't eating gluten, so she felt much better not eating gluten. So the gastroenterologist said, okay, if you feel better, then don't eat them. But then she started cutting out dairy, and then now she feels better if she doesn't eat meat. So when I heard all those things, I identified with that because my daughter is doing all those same things that the author talked about, cutting out the gluten, and the dairy and now the meat. And it's just, I'm definitely going to go out and buy that book and show it to my daughter because it's, she's doing all those things.
Diane, thanks a lot for that call. And Rory, someone in Diane's daughter's position, I mean, we won't go deeply into her medical diagnosis here, obviously, but somebody who's kind of winging it and eliminating one food, then another food and another food, what would you recommend as another approach for her and maybe a doctor to try to pin down what's been causing her problems?
Well, the best approach is what her mother has just suggested, which is to read some of the facts about this and to try to convince her daughter to add some of these things back a little bit at a time to see if perhaps she'll feel better eating some of it. Also, to supplement her diet so that you are replacing the dairy with lots of calcium. You are replacing the gluten with fiber and vitamin and mineral-rich foods. And there are people who don't eat meat, but you can eat, hopefully, chicken and fish so that she's getting enough protein. But some of these conditions, the kids think they have them, but they don't really. They've done so many studies with placebos that if you think it's the placebo-nocebo effect, that you think if you take it out, you feel better. And you do feel better because you think you will. So there's a mental process going on here that has to be addressed as well.
Diane, thanks for the call. Good luck to your daughter. We'll go next to Charles in Verona. Charles, hi.
Hello.
Would you want to tell us about Charles?
Well, I have a little bit of neuropathy in my feet, and one of my sons has a horrible amount of it. And if he eats a little bit of gluten, he just has all kinds of pain, shoots up his legs, feet sore. Recently, my wife she tenderized meat using whatever tenderizer, and he had some of that. And my gosh, he called up and said, "What did you put in that food?" And
so. Charles, before I throw this over to Rory, I want to ask, have you or your son been diagnosed with any kind of celiac disease or gluten intolerance?
Not celiac disease. I'm sure we don't have that. But gluten intolerance, I think for my son, it's pretty obvious he has a problem.
Charles, thanks a lot for that call. Rory, is that a thing, neuropathy, that weird feeling in your extremities, sometimes feet in this case, a pain associated with gluten?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, peripheral neuropathies are one of the symptoms of celiac disease. And Charles has just said, I'm sure that we don't have celiac disease, but until he and his son are tested, they won't know that. And it's very possible neuropathy clinics refer patients to gastroenterologists all the time, and they find that they do have celiac disease. So I think the first thing for him to do, and certainly for his son, is to get tested.
All right. Well, Charles, thanks a lot. Hope that helps for you and your son in particular. We're talking to Rory Jones, co-author of the new book, Gluten Exposed. Back to our callers now with Jackie in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. Jackie, hi.
Hi. I have had heartburn all my life, very bad. And then I went to about 10 different doctors to see if they could figure out what was wrong, and they kept just telling me to take antacids. Nobody could figure out what was wrong, so I stopped eating wheat, and the heartburn went away. And then I thought, well, maybe I have celiac. So I hadn't been eating wheat probably for about 6 years by that time. I went and asked the doctor to test me for celiac. She did a blood test and said I didn't have celiac, but if I eat wheat, I get sick. Hmm. And I get this horrible, horrible stomach aches and heartburn. So what do I do?
Well, it sounds... I am not a doctor. I mean, it sounds as if you have a form of reflux. If the doctor discussed this with you, which is why he's giving you antacids, and the problem with being on antacids for a long period of time is there are issues related to that because they are killing the stomach acid that normally kills all the bugs that come through you. There are tests for reflux, and there are reflux diets that could help. And it's possible that gluten is playing a part in here, but it's also possible by eliminating a number of other foods that form part of this reflux diet that you'll be able to solve the problem and eat gluten again.
Jackie, thanks a lot for the call. Rory, I wanted to talk to you about some of the cutting-edge research. You list some different ongoing research efforts to try to deal with celiac disease, potential vaccine, and other cures maybe on the horizon. What's out there?
Well, there's a lot in the pipeline. There are a number of enzymes that are showing a lot of promise in their ability to degrade gluten. There are other things that are working to seal up what is called leaky gut. That's not a medical term. Most of the enzymes and the intestinal permeability blockers are being used with a gluten-free diet in case there's an occasional indiscretion. The vaccine, which is showing a great deal of promise, is going into testing now. It is much like the shots that are given for allergies, where you have to take them every week. So it's a matter of developing them so that they will be tolerable to patients as well. But that's all in the pipeline, and that's still pretty far down the road.
So right now it's still all about controlling diet if you do have celiac.
Correct, because that is a known treatment that works, and it has no side effects. And that's the other part of drug testing. You have to make sure that that doesn't have negative side effects for the patient.
Rory, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
We've been talking to Rory Jones. She's co-author with Dr. Peter Green of the new book, Gluten Exposed. They've also written a book called Celiac Disease, A Hidden Epidemic. Head over to the Central Time Facebook page. We've got a link to some information about Gluten Exposed. And tell us if you've gone gluten-free, why not, and what difference it might have made.